They hand out posters or flyers saying where they'll be. Usually they make a cash deal with a farmer or with someone who owns a field outside of town. After a few days, they leave. Why do they come at all? What do they do? Well, there are always people who want their fortunes read, and there are games of chance, gambling. Usually they are crooked. Or maybe a fast exotic lay, Halleck thought. He saw the kick pleat of the girl's skirt shift again as she stepped into the van. How would she move? His mind answered, like the ocean getting ready to storm, that's how. Do people buy drugs from them? Hashish, maybe, he said, or opium. He had come to this part of Connecticut as a teenager, and had been here ever since, in Fairview and neighboring Northport. He hadn't seen any gypsies in almost 25 years, not since he had been a kid growing up in North Carolina, when he had lost $5, an allowance saved up carefully over almost 3 months to buy his mother a birthday present, playing the Wheel of Fortune. They weren't supposed to allow anyone under 16 to play, but, of course, if you had the coin or the long green, you could step up and put it down. Some things never changed, he reckoned, and chief among them was the old adage that when money talks, nobody walks. If asked before today, he would have shrugged and guessed that there were no more traveling gypsy caravans. But, of course, the wandering breed never died out. They came in rootless and left the same way, human tumbleweeds, who cut whatever deals they could and then blew out of town with dollars in their greasy wallets that had been earned on the time clocks they themselves spurned. They survived. Hitler had tried to exterminate them along with the Jews and the homosexuals, but they would outlive 1,000 Hitlers, he supposed. I thought the common was public property, Linda said. That's what we learned in school. Well, in a way it is, Halleck said. Common means commonly owned by the townspeople, the taxpayers. Bang. Lie number 2. Taxation had nothing at all to do with common land in New England, ownership of or use of. See Richards versus Jerram, New Hampshire, or Baker versus Olins. That one went back to 1835, or... The taxpayers, she said in a musing voice. You need a permit to use the common. Clang. Lie number 3. That idea had been overturned in 1931, when a bunch of poor potato farmers set up a Hooverville in the heart of Lewiston, Maine. The city had appealed to Roosevelt's Supreme Court and hadn't even gotten a hearing. That was because the Hooverites had picked Pettingill Park to camp in, and Pettingill Park happened to be common land. Like when the Shrine Circus comes, he amplified. Why didn't the gypsies get a permit, Dad? She sounded sleepy now. Thank God. Well, maybe they forgot. Not a snowball's chance in hell, Lynn. Not in Fairview. Not when you see the common from Lantern Drive and the country club. Not when that view is part of what you paid for, along with the private schools, which teach computer programming on banks of brand new apples and TRS-80s, and the relatively clean air and the quiet at night. The Shrine Circus is okay. The Easter egg hunt is even better, but gypsies? Here's your hat. What's your hurry? We know dirt when we see it. Not that we touch it, Christ, no. We have maids and housekeepers to get rid of dirt in our houses. When it shows up on the town common, we've got Hopley. But those truths are not for a girl in junior high, Halleck thought. Those are truths that you learn in high school and in college. Maybe you get it from your sorority sisters, or maybe it just comes like a shortwave transmission from outer space. Not our kind, dear. Stay away. Good night, Daddy. Good night, Lynn. He had kissed her again and left. Rain, driven by a sudden strong gust of wind, slatted against his study window, and Halleck awoke as if from a doze. Not our kind, dear, he thought again, and actually laughed in the silence. The sound made him afraid, because only loonies laughed in an empty room. Loonies did that all the time. It was what made them loony. Not our kind. If he had never believed it before, he believed it now. Now that he was thinner. Halleck watched as Houston's nurse drew 1, 2, 3 ampules of blood from his left arm and put them into a carrier like eggs in a carton. Earlier, Houston had given him 3 stool cards and told him to mail them in. Halleck pocketed them glumly, and then bent over for the proctological, dreading the humiliation of it, as always, more than the minor discomfort. That feeling of being invaded. Fullness. "Relax," Houston said, snapping on the thin rubber glove. "As long as you can't feel both of my hands on your shoulders, you're all right." He laughed heartily. Halleck closed his eyes. Houston saw him 2 days later. He had, he said, seen to it that his blood work was given priority. Halleck sat down in the den-like room, pictures of clipper ships on the walls, deep leather chairs, deep pile gray rug, where Houston did his consulting. His heart was hammering hard, and he felt droplets of cold sweat nestled at each temple. "I'm not going to cry in front of a man that tells nigger jokes," he told himself with fierce grimness, "and not for the first time. If I have to cry, I'll drive out of town and park the car and do it." "Everything looks fine," Houston said mildly. Halleck blinked. The fear had by now rooted deep enough so that he was positive he had misheard Houston. "What?" "Everything looks fine," Houston repeated. "We can do some more tests if you want, Billy, but I don't see the point right now. Your blood looks better than it has at your last 2 physicals, as a matter of fact. Cholesterol is down, same with the triglycerides. You've lost some more weight. The nurse got you at 217 this morning. But what can I say? You're still almost 30 pounds over your optimum weight, and I don't want you to lose sight of that, but—" he grinned. "I'd sure like to know your secret."
"I don't have one," Halleck said.
He felt both confused and tremendously relieved, the way he had felt on a couple of occasions in college when he had passed tests for which he was unprepared. "We'll hold judgment in abeyance until we get the results on your Heyman-Reichling series."
"My what?"
"The shit cards," Houston said, and then laughed heartily. "Something might show up there, but really, Billy, the lab ran 23 different tests on your blood, and they all look good. That's persuasive."
Halleck let out a long, shaky sigh. "I was scared," he said.
"It's the people who aren't who die young," Houston replied. He opened his desk drawer and took out a bottle with a small spoon dangling from the cap by a chain. The spoon's handle, Halleck saw, was in the shape of the Statue of Liberty. "Toot sweet?" Halleck shook his head. He was content, however, to sit where he was,